Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and you are listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Well, just in case you are not familiar with the history of CMDA, this God-ordained ministry began in 1931 in the dorm room of Mr. George Peterson, a first-year medical student at Northwestern University Medical School in Chicago, Illinois. George was actually having difficulty coping with being one of the few Christians on campus that he was aware of. So one day, during his second semester, a providential encounter with second-year medical student Ken Geezer became a pivotal moment. Both men had been experiencing a sense of loneliness in their Christian walk there at Northwestern. So they began to meet regularly for prayer and scripture reading. Other students found out and actually joined them, and it quickly became a movement that not only impacted Northwestern, but also several medical school campuses across the country. Now, more than 90 years later, CMDA has become more than 40 ministries that educate, encourage, and equip many thousands of healthcare professionals and students around the world. I'm joined on this week's episode by Mr. Ryan Orlando. He's a third-year medical student from Arizona who not only is being impacted by our campus ministry at CMDA, but also has been influenced by mentors who encouraged him to get involved in advocacy in the medical public square. I ask him to share about how CMDA has made and continues to make a difference for him. So let's listen in to our recent conversation. Well, today on CMDA Matters, I'm out in the field attending an educational conference with a medical student, a third-year medical student that I had a chance to meet yesterday and who's been very involved in advocacy efforts from his home state of Arizona within the arena of the American Academy of Family Physicians as a medical student. So, Ryan Orlando, welcome to CMDA Matters.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
So, you're a third-year student.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about your school and about your path to becoming a medical student and hopefully someday a doctor.
Absolutely. So, I go to the Arizona College of Osteopathic Medicine, which is Midwestern University in Glendale, Arizona. And like as you said, I'm a third-year medical student there. My journey to medical school was fairly a simple one. I entered college knowing that I wanted to pursue medical school and hoping that I wouldn't get sidetracked from that, as a lot of people do. Thankfully, I did really well in college and my mind didn't change. I still wanted to be a physician. And so I took one gap year after college, which college for me was in San Diego at Point Loma Nazarene University.
Well, not a bad place to go to school.
Very beautiful school, absolutely. Yeah, it was a great time, and I learned a lot there. Great pre-med advisor there, and I took one gap year. I was an EMT in the city of San Diego, the county, which was really, really a blast, and then after that, made the trip over to Arizona to be in the DO school.
How early on in medical school did you find out about CMDA? You've been a part of the student group, I believe.
Yeah, so very early on, because in the beginning of the fall quarter at my school, there's always a club fair, a campus club fair. And I attended, you know, in the beginning of my first year of medical school, eager to join student groups that I was interested in. And CMDA was one of those groups that had a booth. And I spoke with the student leaders, and it was one of the probably about six or seven groups that I joined initially. Because of my faith, I knew I wanted to continue that. I went to a Christian high school, I went to a Christian college, and now for the first time ever, I was not at a Christian or religious institution at all. And so I wanted to still have that, you know, group of Christians that I could always rely on if need be.
Your story, I'm sure, is very familiar to many of our listeners, and it's very similar to my own story, coming into medical school and discovering CMDS at the time and finding a wonderful fellowship. So you entered medical school at a strange, bizarre time in the middle of the pandemic. What was it like being a medical student in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic?
I think the first word that comes to mind is isolating. Thankfully, I attended Midwestern University alongside my wife, who's a dental student there. So we were nearby each other, had that, you know, close-knit family. However, it was really just me in my apartment, just studying all day, watching lectures online. Once or twice a week, because I go to an osteopathic medical school, we have OMM lab, where we learn those hands-on treatments.
Yes.
And that still stuck, even through COVID. We would go once a week, and that would essentially be our social interaction for the week. It was about 45 minutes to an hour of OMM Lab. You had one partner, you wore a mask, obviously, and there was distancing measures in place. And so that was the best part of the week because it was the only part that I got to meet my peers. And because of that, I finished my first year of medical school with about four friends that I could actually call friends, you know? So it was definitely not the experience I had thought of. You know, when this whole pandemic started in March of that year, everyone was saying, oh, it'll be done by June. Like, well, it'll be over. Well, we won't be talking about this in August, right? Certainly not. So I was under the false presumption that, oh, COVID wouldn't affect my medical school. I just didn't want it to. I don't think anybody did. And I thought, oh, it'll pass. It didn't, clearly.
Any residual still impact now as a third year at this point?
Good question. I think I still don't know as many people as, I mean, my class is large. We have about 250 students in my third year class. So there was no way I was going to know everybody. But still, I think I missed out a lot on I don't have a friend group per se in med school. And I was sort of, you know, interested in finding a group of friends. I just have some individual friends here and there. So I would say socially it has impacted that for me. But again, I have the comfort of being married and, you know, having my partner, my wife with me. And so I feel like that can sometimes change your need. At least for me, it changed my need for the social connection. So I'm more or less satisfied only having a few close friends at school now.
Well, we're here at the Matthew Bolfin Conference, which is an annual conference that's hosted by APLOG, the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, as well as the American College of Pediatricians, a couple of actually sister organizations within the new Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine that CMDA is a part of. So you obviously care about advocacy, about life, and I was introduced to you before this conference by one of our very active and involved advocacy family physicians in St. Louis, Dr. Josephine Glaser. She's a part of a medical interest group within the AAFP, the American Association of Family Practice, and there is a pro-life medical interest group. Now, I don't believe that ACOG or other AMA, think there's a pro, but there is still in the AAFP, and you've gotten involved as a student. How did that happen, and what's that been like as a student?
Well, to get to the AAFP member interest group, the Physicians for Life member interest group, that was not my first entrance into the AAFP. So to really get there, it started back when I was a part of our state chapter, State Academy of Family Physician chapter, the Arizona Academy of Family Physicians. I was one of their health policy scholars. And so that got me into the world of the AAFP to begin with. And so that was a program that I did last year in my second year in the winter and spring that took me to the Family Medicine Advocacy Summit in Washington, D.C., which the AAFP puts on every year. And so I was involved in advocacy at the national level with family medicine and physicians and residents, which was great. And then that sort of was the catalyst that propelled me to have all these other opportunities now within the AAFP, which would include being the student delegate for my Arizona Academy of Family Physician chapter. So I went then to Kansas City, Missouri for the national conference that same year. And then I found out what a member interest group was in the AAFP, and I thought, well, there's a pro-life member interest group. I'll join that.
How big is it, Ryan?
Don't quote me, but there's somewhere in the realm between 650 and 700 members of the Physicians for Life member interest group.
A number of our leadership team on our family medicine section of CMDA are involved in that medical interest or member interest group, as you call it. And so I've heard about some things that are happening with that and the influence that the group is trying to wield within all of the AFP. It's an uphill battle, David versus Goliath. Certainly the majority of folks, members of the AFP, are not within that. And I personally have friends who've stopped being AFP members because of their agenda. That's supportive of abortion. Speaking of abortion, and since Roe v. Wade happened, there have been some discussions by the AAFP regarding pregnancy resource centers. And you've had some involvement and from what I understand, some influence and some policies. Tell our listeners about that.
Absolutely. So this takes us back to the AAFP National Conference for Family Medicine Students and Residents back in July of last year, which was in Kansas City, as it always is. And like I mentioned previously, I was representing my state chapter, the Arizona AFP, as student delegate to the Student Congress of Delegates that meets at that national conference in Kansas City. So I was one of nearly 50 medical students that were representing different states to come together to the Student Congress of Delegates and propose resolutions to the Academy, essentially suggestions on what we think from our student perspective the Academy should be focused on. And one of the resolutions was a resolution that proposed the AAFP to ban family medicine residency programs from allowing their residents to rotate through pregnancy medical centers or pregnancy resource centers. And I heard of this during the session where the proponents of the resolution were discussing it and bringing it up into conversation. And there's a bit of debate that can happen in the Student Congress. It's welcomed conversation. We don't technically really like to call it debate. we reference it as discussion, and it is very professional. And so I was hearing this resolution being spoken about on all the reasons why they were asserting pregnancy medical centers are just horrible. They damage patients' health. They're not good for women. All these things that I'm like, I knew they weren't true, but in the moment in time, I didn't have statistics or, you know, specific facts to perfectly like rebut what they were saying.
Yes.
And so, but I still felt this just deep-seated need to get up and at least say something to the effect of, I don't like this, right? In a more proficient way. And so my heart was racing. I could barely breathe, but I was like, oh my goodness, I guess I have to say something because I don't like this. And I was listening to people talk over and over again about how they're supporting it, a number of students getting up and saying that. And I was like, I need to just say something. And so it wasn't entirely eloquent, but I did go up there. And essentially my argument was, look, I don't think this is representative of the totality of care that can be offered to pregnant women. You know, we're trying to eliminate one of the options for women and for these centers that can be of great help to them. Why, you know, and especially a lot of these centers that provide medical services, they're licensed and they're overseen by medical doctors. Why would we disallow family medicine residents from the opportunity to see what those centers provide?
Right, right.
Because patients that want to go to those centers will go to them, whether or not their physician maybe recommends it or not. But it's always better for the physician to know, at least, right, what their patients are doing, where they're going. And by banning that from a family medicine residency program, well, that's just limiting the scope now of the family medicine physician to understand what those centers are.
So as you're sharing, this is in front of other students or
yes.
a larger body. So did you see any heads nodding, bobbing up and down in agreement, or did you see grimaces on faces?
I didn't see faces. I was looking at a panel of individuals that were hearing and taking notes. And so the panel was, they were very stone cold for every resolution. They're just very blank in the face, as they, you know, I think they should be just taking notes, sort of listening. They're making appropriate eye contact with me, but nothing like overtly against or overtly for. No body language that was too suggestive. And I was facing them, so I didn't see students. I could perhaps imagine what maybe some of them were.
So now take like, us, but what happened next?
Yeah, so that sort of conversation happened, and then the next day it was time to vote, and so it got brought up for renewed discussion, and it had been edited in some ways that I can only presume is perhaps because of my opposition in part, and then I think also the council noted some issues with the resolution, and so nonetheless it was brought back up with some amendments, but it still was problematic. And so I got up again, and I was backing up to the previous day when the first discussion happened, I thought this is definitely going to be talked about again. So that night, I stayed up super late, and I was researching, and I made a document that I could read from when I testified the next day. And so now we're at the next day, it's brought back up for discussion. I'm like, okay, I'm ready this time. So I had some statistics. I felt there was a great need for education on what pregnancy medical centers are, pregnancy resource centers. People didn't really know, and they were throwing out like baseless claims that I was like, I finally found the answer to just by doing a, you know, a quick search of the internet. And so I felt like it was important to educate not only the council who's deciding on the resolution, but the students who are going to vote on it, like what this is actually doing, what this is actually talking about. And so nonetheless, I was doing that. And then every student, there were tens of students that were getting up and voicing support. And I was the only one that got up a couple times to, you know, voice opposition. And so finally, it was nearing the end of the discussion, and this colleague of mine who I hadn't met previously, but she's a younger woman, medical student. She approached me in the row that I was sitting in while another student was speaking to the Congress. And she was like, "Ryan, I think I have something I could share with the Congress, but like, I'm kind of scared. I'm kind of nervous." And I said, "Oh my gosh." I said, "Why are you nervous?" I said, "What do you have to say?" And then she starts telling me like, "Well, I have a personal experience, you know, with an unintentional pregnancy. And I went to one of these centers and they really helped me." And I said, "You need to speak.
You need to speak,
you know?" And I was just trying to embolden her as much as I could. We obviously had to talk quietly because the Congress was in session, but she was led to do it. And she went up and spoke her experience, which was something I couldn't do, right? Because I've never experienced this care. How could I? You know, I'm a 24-year-old guy here. I haven't gone to one of these centers, not as a patient, but she has. And so that was just such a powerful testimony she shared. And I think ultimately it influenced the final decision, which was the resolution was amended so much that it ended up in a completely different direction. And it was passed, but the way it was passed was much better than when it was originally written. And essentially what it passed as was a resolution asking the Academy of Family Physicians to simply investigate these pregnancy medical centers, find out more about them, and not form an official opinion on them yet.
So did that go up the chain, up the food chain, if you will, in terms to resident and, you know, the full Congress in terms of its influence?
Yeah. So I have a limited understanding of where these resolutions go once they're passed. It does go up the chain. So the answer is yes. Where exactly it went and the name of the, you know, or the group that maybe took it on, I'm not entirely sure. The status of that resolution, I'm not entirely sure.
But I have to believe, Ryan, that not only did you influence the young woman who then was emboldened to give the testimony, but to others listening in, maybe some who would have just too intrepidation about giving their own testimony, their opinion. And some of those are going to go on to future leadership within the AFP.
Right.
And so you speaking up, and that there is an opposing view to trying to shut down these pregnancy resource centers had a ripple effect, certainly.
Yeah.
So you're here at this conference, the Matthew Bulfin Conference. We've both heard a number of great speakers. What are you going to take away from this conference?
So far, what I'm going to take away was a session we had yesterday. It was all about the mental health consequences of abortion, which is something that I knew nothing about. Intrinsically, I knew there has to be some adverse mental health consequences of abortion. But busy medical student here, I don't make the time to spend hours to, you know, research the evidence and find the studies. And so finding myself here at this conference is just, I'm taking notes on every session. And for that session in particular, I just felt like I came out of it so well equipped with studies that I can now access very quickly and summary points that I, like talking points, you might say, that I can memorize and remember for when I might have to be prepared to speak on the topic in the future. I just think that this conference, and there have been subsequent plenary sessions where I feel like I've walked out with notes that are going to serve me very well in the future, along with sources. It's just condensing all the time it would take to research all these things into one hour session that just is so highly valuable. There's no other way I would have come out with that knowledge.
What would you say to other students who wonder how in the world that they could possibly fit into their medical school years an involvement in advocacy like you've been involved? How would you encourage our listeners and maybe our grad listeners who are impacting small groups of students? What would you share with them?
Yeah, so getting involved in advocacy in general, whether it's pro-life focused or not, really starts with your school's student organizations. So what are you interested in? Are you interested in family medicine or pediatrics or OBGYN? Get involved in those student groups. And then from there, find out who their faculty advisor is, because they're often highly involved with that organization, right? And then they can lead you to leadership positions and advocacy. There's no shortage of opportunity. I think the biggest hurdle for medical students, including myself, is just finding the opportunity, right? The opportunities are there. It's just I've been blessed with a specific physician faculty at my medical school who has really set me up well with these opportunities. And so it really depends on, you know, finding that faculty who's really involved in getting in touch with them, whether you just cold email them and ask them, "Hey, what are the opportunities available to me?" They'll get back to you. Or look up your state chapter. Every major medical organization has a state chapter, right? Like I've discussed the American Academy of Family Physicians as well as the Arizona Academy of Family Physicians. So getting involved with your state chapter, if something you're interested in, all of those chapters, they have student positions. Mm. They do. And it's at least most of them do, from my experience.
Have you been blessed with a godly Christian mentor in your school here in Glendale? Or have you, through Dr. Glazer or others, had to go for distance mentoring, if you will?
Sure. Yeah. I enjoy talking about this. So my first pro-life physician mentor is Dr. Bill Lyle, Dr. William Lyle. He's colloquially known as the pro-life doc. That's his brand. But I met him when he spoke in Arizona at Choices Pregnancy Center. They had an event and they had him come speak. And I was so enthused by his, you might even call it a performance. If you've ever heard Dr. Bill Lyle speak, he is an energetic guy who has an incredible talk about the pro-life issue. And he gives it mainly to churches and local centers. And I was just so enthralled by it that I just had to meet him. And so I met Dr. Lyle. He's a fellow osteopathic physician. He is also a fellow of the American College of OBGYNs. He's a board certified OB. And yeah, he and I just had a great conversation. He gave me his number and we've been in touch over the months. And so he knows everything I've been up to with the AAFP and other ventures that this pro-life journey's taken me on. But he's really the first mentor I've had. And then certainly being involved with the AAFP pro-life Physicians for Life member interest group has given me a whole host of physicians now who are pro-life.
I think some students may think that there's somebody like Dr. Lyle, you know, who's well-known and that maybe I'm, you know, little me, what would interest would they have in my life? And I think students like yourself would be surprised at the desire, the motivation for folks like Dr. Lyle to impact and help students like yourself get more involved and have a voice. Mm-hmm. So I do want to encourage any students listening out there, no matter who it is, when students reach out to me, I just get so excited. And sometimes I'm not the right person. I know someone locally that they could match up with and even meet with that could mentor them, the direction, specialty, and certainly to represent for them what it's like to be a grad physician who follows Christ ardently. Switching gears. What would you like to be doing, see yourself doing 5 years from now? I mean, what's the future for Dr. Ryan Orlando?
I love it.
Where you get that?
I love it. In 5 years, I am a, hopefully, board-certified family medicine physician. Mm-hmm.
That's why the time frame was 5 years.
Exactly. That's perfect time frame. So board-certified in family medicine in an outpatient setting, doing primary care medicine. And the reason I want to do family medicine in particular is just because it's just such a vast field with so much opportunity. And if I desire to pull my practice in a certain way, I have essentially the freedom to do so as long as I'm trained. And so the wide scope of family medicine is what really draws me to it. Clearly, I have an interest in obstetrics and the pro-life cause, and incorporating that into my practice is something I hope to do, you know, be a known, you know, pro-life physician that, you know, female patients can come to if they desire a pro-life physician to care for them. So that's what I'm doing personally. Hopefully got a kid or two and growing my family.
How long have you been married?
I've been married for a year and a half now.
Okay.
Year and a half now.
What does your wife do?
Lovely wife. She's a dental student at Northwestern.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that.
Yep. So it'll be good. But yeah, really just family medicine. And then clearly I'm interested in involving myself with extracurricular activities. So ultimately, maybe not 5 years, but maybe later on, I'd love to be like a medical director for a pregnancy center, a local pregnancy center, provide that leadership if the opportunity ever presents itself, something like that. And then also advocating at the state level for pro-life legislation and other legislation that aligns with, you know, my values.
These are exciting days for docs who hold to the sanctity of life, want to protect life for the preborn and care deeply about moms, care about moms and their babies. And I've enjoyed this conference very much. Ryan, I do want to thank you for taking the time to join me today on CMDA Matters. So God bless you, and I hope the rest of this conference, you learn a ton of things that are going to arm you to protect the unborn.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm truly amazed by Ryan's experience in medical school during the COVID pandemic and how this impacted his ability to develop even basic social connections with other students on campus. And it only further convinces me of the importance of CMDA on today's healthcare campuses. I just can't imagine what medical school would have been like were it not for the relationships that I got to develop through CMDA with other Christian students who were walking through the same journey with me at the same time. After all, that's how CMDA started all those years ago with George Peterson and Ken Geezer, because they too were looking for community, iron sharpening iron, as they focused on staying connected to God through healthcare training.
There is such value and encouragement in staying connected with other Christians in healthcare. That's why the root of CMDA's ministry is in campus and community ministries, because you shouldn't have to face the hardships and struggles of both your healthcare training and career alone. We are here to walk alongside you and be a resource. With more than 80 local ministry groups and over 320 campus chapters around the country, you can find connection with your colleagues through CMDA. For more information and how to find a group in your area, visit ccm.cmda.org.
One of the key pieces to the puzzle of developing community on campuses is having experienced campus advisors who come alongside students and provide guidance and direction, mentoring, and even more. Students like Ryan need wise believers to pour into their lives, as well as to help them flourish in their training. At CMDA, we can see that the need for mentors is greater than ever before. In fact, we included an article in the fall 2022 CMDA Today magazine all about the importance of mentors. It was written by Reverend Bill Reichardt, who's the vice president of CMDA's Campus and Community Ministries. You can find that article online at cmda.org/cmdatoday. You can also learn more about how to become part of CMDA's mentoring network at cmdamentor.org. You'll find tools and resources, you can join a mentoring community, and you can discover how to begin the mentoring process. I want to encourage you, friends, to check it out and learn more and get started as a mentor today. At CMDA, we are also driven by our mission to equip students just like Ryan with the information that they need to know to be prepared to speak out with a Christian voice. That's part of the educational value that CMDA provides through our continuing education department, as well as our CMDA Learning Center. Did you know that CMDA provided the continuing education credits for that Matthew Bulfin Educational Conference that both Ryan and I were attending when we recorded this interview? Well, here's Jamie with more information about how you can start taking advantage of this free resource just for CMDA members.
If you haven't yet visited the CMDA Learning Center, then you are missing out. Our Learning Center is filled with continuing education courses to help you learn about today's bioethical issues. More than 100 hours of credits are available at no cost to CMDA members, and we're adding new courses on a regular basis. Designed to advance your knowledge in key areas of healthcare today, our educational content is a trusted source of education for thousands of healthcare professionals, and it's free for CMDA members. Get started today by visiting the Learning Center at cmda.org/learning.
While you're in the Learning Center, be sure to check out the recent webinar that we hosted with the Hendricks Center at Dallas Theological Seminary. If Ryan's passion for pregnancy resource centers spoke to your heart, well, then you need to watch this particular webinar. It focused on critical conversations on pregnancy after Roe. And our two special guests are both actively involved with pregnancy resource centers. In the webinar, Dr. Daryl Bach, he moderated a discussion with Dr. Sandy Christensen, who's a board-certified OBGYN, who's the National Medical Director for CareNet. She was joined by Roland Warren, who's the president and CEO of CareNet. Their conversation examined the pastoral and medical support needed by women who have complicated pregnancies in this post-Roe world. And we considered the theological, the medical, legal, and pastoral perspectives required to serve patients well. You can learn more and earn continuing education credits through this webinar in the CMDA Learning Center by going to cmda.org/learning. You've heard me talk about CMDA's specialty sections on the podcast before, but I specifically wanted to mention our family medicine section to you because they're actively working with that Physicians for Life member interest group that Ryan and I discussed during our conversation today. CMDA's family medicine section is chaired by Dr. Dean Bartholomew from the great state of Wyoming. It's very active in the American Academy of Family Physicians, and they need pro-life physicians to join the AAFP's member interest group to show that this pro-life membership is strong and it's vocal and is not to be dismissed in today's culture. If you'd like more information about our family medicine section and their advocacy efforts, just visit cmda.org/family medicine. I was so impressed by Ryan's commitment to advocate for truth concerning pregnancy resource centers in discussions with other student leaders within the AAFP. These students, like Ryan, will be the leaders in the next generation of Christian healthcare professionals. I hope you agree, we need more students like him to see and understand the importance of standing up, as well as following the biblical mandate found in Proverbs 31, to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, ensure justice for those being crushed. If you'd like to learn more or get involved with CMDA's advocacy efforts that focus on issues like abortion, assisted suicide, protecting minors and even young children from transgender treatments, conscience freedoms, and so much more, you can contact advocacy@cmda.org. Our advocacy team would love to hear from you and get you connected right where you are. I hope that you'll join me next week as my special guest will be Dr. Jerome Adams, who was the 20th Surgeon General of the United States. He's joining us for our Saturday evening, April 29th banquet during our upcoming 2023 CMDA National Convention. He graciously joined me through Zoom to give us a preview of what he'll be sharing at the convention. I've been wanting, honestly, to get Dr. Adams on the program since 2017, and it finally happened, so you don't want to miss it. Don't forget, if you want to suggest a future guest for our podcast, you can just email us using cmdamatters@cmda.org. And if you like our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share us on your favorite social media platform. These words are from a CMDA student member from Texas, and they seem like a great way to conclude today's episode. That student said, "I truly believe that without CMDA, I would have succumbed to the pressures of medical school and let that become my number one priority. Each week, there's an event with CMDA that allows me the opportunity to step away from the books and remember why I am doing this in the first place." One critical reason to be a part of CMDA is to help you, friends, step away from the busyness of the healthcare world, or maybe your spouse or a friend, someone else you know in healthcare, and help us or them remember why we're doing this in the first place. Ryan's testimony has really challenged me, and I hope it helps you remember why you pursued healthcare as a profession in the first place. We believe our ultimate purpose and fulfillment in medicine or dentistry or pharmacy or physiotherapy or optometry or many other specialties, all of those healthcare disciplines that we find our CMDA members practicing as followers of Jesus Christ, our vision, our purpose is found in bringing the hope and healing of Christ to the world. That's what matters to CMDA and CMDA matters. We'll see you next week, friends. God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.